This episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress, from connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com.
All right. Welcome to Inside Transportation. I'm Nicholas Saravia, Senior Analyst at Inside.com. Today, we're going to talk with Ali Kashani, the CEO and co-founder of Serve Robotics, which focuses on sidewalk robot deliveries. Thanks for joining, Ali.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get started. Could you give us a bit about your background? What did you do before getting into sidewalk robots, and how did you get into the space?
Absolutely. I'm a three-time entrepreneur. I'm an engineer at heart and a nerd. I wanted to be an entrepreneur since I heard about Bill Gates when I was living and going to school in Iran. I didn't know anything about entrepreneurship or tech or Silicon Valley, but I just knew this is something that I want to do. And funny enough, I decided since he made PCs mainstream, I want to make robots mainstream. So this was somehow very serendipitous. I moved to Canada when I was 19 years old, did my PhD in robotics and computer vision, and then started my first company there. Ended up starting a couple of companies and selling them, the last one to Postmates, where I started the X division focused on making sidewalk delivery robots.
Yeah, so about that, so you founded Lox Inc., and which was acquired by Postmates around 2017, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
And it was on robots, correct?
Actually, it was an AI company focused on food personalization. So the robotic kind of concept was something that the Postmates founders wanted to work on, and my background happened to be the perfect match for it.
So what was your vision, and what was Postmates' vision at the beginning in that special projects team?
Yeah, you know, the X division at Postmates was basically set up to work on futuristic projects that are going to have material impact on the company's trajectory in the short term. So we were not thinking about moonshot projects, but things that we actually thought are well within reach. We just can't kind of do them on quarterly basis. It's not a KPI that you can change next quarter. So one of those projects was the AI that I was working on in my startup. And then the other one was this robotics vision. I actually did my, studies in the computer vision and robotic space. I was working on the DARPA challenge back, in 2006, but I didn't think the industry was quite ready for self-driving cars to roll out. So I didn't actually focus when I joined the industry and started companies. I didn't focus on that space. But when the kind of idea of sidewalk robots was presented and I had this opportunity to work with folks at Postmates, it was very clear to me, this is how self-driving is going to be introduced. This is how it's going to get commercialized. And this is how robots are going to get introduced. The way that Hollywood image of robots that we've always had, this is how it's going to get mainstream. So it was just a no-brainer opportunity to be part of that, part of that wave.
Cool. Yeah. And so this was clearly pre-pandemic. And so demand for contactless delivery was quite less than it is now, I'm assuming. So how did it turn from being a sort of a short range to a problem that you needed to solve now?
You know, it was always a problem we needed to solve. We kind of, the way we like to capture this idea is moving a 2-pound burrito in a 2-ton car doesn't make a lot of sense, especially when you realize that about half of all deliveries that happen in the U.S. are within a couple of miles. There are deliveries that basically we can complete in a robot on a sidewalk, but 90% of the time they're being completed in cars. So this was a problem because it's not efficient. It's a problem because of labor shortage issues and cost of labor. It's a problem because of congestion, because of parking issues, because of cost of delivery for merchants. Now, the pandemic happened to add another dimension that everybody really understood very quickly, which is having contactless delivery, having an infrastructure that you can rely on during this kind of crisis. To kind of sum it up, the way I actually think about it is if you're working on the future and you kind of position yourself in the right place, every change, every crisis somehow accelerates in that direction because we always need to be a little bit more efficient when something happens. So whether it's the pandemic or the post-pandemic kind of labor shortage or even the most recent kind of situation, the unfortunate situation that's happening in Ukraine, raising the gas prices, every single time these things actually end up accelerating this industry. So you just keep getting these tailwinds as a result.
When the pandemic first broke out, where did it find you? Were you in a development phase or had you been past that?
Yeah, we had robots already deployed in LA as early as 2018. Our kind of serve fleet, the robots, the form factor that you see them today, were deployed in 2019. So we had just put robots out there and we were scaling up our deliveries and the shutdowns began. And it was very quickly clear to us that we are not a team that needs to kind of scale back. We actually need to be even more present. So during the 2020 kind of phase of pandemic, we had done more than 10,000 deliveries to thousands of households from hundreds of merchants in the area we operated in LA.
And so jumping on to 2020, Uber acquired Postmates for $2.65 billion, combining for a market share of 37% in the food delivery space. What were some of the advantages that brought about joining Uber at this point in time?
Uber is an incredible organization. You immediately had 37% market share, which means more scale and more utilization for robots. When you think about robots, you require a certain amount of utility. You need to use them basically as often as possible because your fixed cost of building a robot and hosting a robot and all that is a significant portion of the operation. So the more jobs you do, the better the economics gets. So one of our advantages from day one was having access to the Postmates kind of volume of demand, which was millions of deliveries per month. Now that was going to get multiplied thanks to Uber. So it was very kind of fortunate for us to become part of that bigger organization.
So since 2020, Uber has divested from a number of units. It divested from its autonomous vehicles segment, its air mobility, and sidewalk delivery from which Serve came about. In terms of at least the AV and air mobility space, it's been widely reported that they were farther away from profitability than the core business itself. If you can elaborate a bit on the unit economics that it found you back then and now and into the future.
So unit economics for sidewalk delivery?
That's right.
Right. Yeah. So this is actually what's particularly exciting about this. So we've been working on this tech for 5 years, and we started by looking at the Postmates data. So it was a very data-driven process where even the specifications of the robot, how much battery should it have? How much capacity should it have? What level of autonomy do you need? How should you actually dispatch these robots? What's the best way to utilize them to save costs? Every one of these decisions for us was made based on Postmates data. So today where we find ourselves is actually the cost per delivery for us is already less than a courier cost when you look at fully loaded costs on both fronts. And this is obviously a very pivotal moment in the industry because now it's just a matter of scaling it up, which is exactly what we're doing.
So let's dive into the robots themselves. For folks that are listening or watching this, if you could describe what these look like, these robots look like up close, and if you could talk a little bit about the tech components. So do you use LiDAR or computer vision?
Sure. They are super friendly. They look like a cross between Wall-E and the Minions. So imagine a shopping cart that drives itself and it has a lot of personality and you know can interact with you. So in terms of the technology inside, we've actually achieved a really important milestone in this industry, which is level 4 autonomy. So for folks who may not kind of know the levels by heart, level 2 is kind of where your Tesla car would be, where you have to kind of hold the steering and keep your eyes on the road. You're always engaged. The human is always in the loop. So is level 3. You still have to have a person in the loop constantly. Level 5, which is the highest level, is where you actually don't require any human in the loop at any time. So the robot can do everything by itself. That's sci-fi. You're not going to have that anytime soon. So level 4 is the holy grail. That's where everybody's aiming for, which is in the ODD areas, the designed kind of domain of the robot. It can operate by itself without someone having to be in the loop.
Hey, everybody, just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com.
Now, the good news for sidewalk delivery is because the robots operate at a slower speed and they have less weight, they have less kinetic energy. It's like 3,000 robots of our size to have the same kinetic energy of a single car. So because of that, you can engage humans remotely to help a robot when it's in a situation that it can't handle by itself. So it's this hybrid of people's kind of brain and the machine brain. The robot can do 99% of things by itself. And in our case, we've reached a level where the robot does not have to be supervised when it's doing that. But occasionally, when it's in kind of the long tail of edge cases, which is the challenge for this industry, we can then ask humans to help. So it's this perfect blend of the two kind of skills, which enables us to make these robots commercials today.
So you mentioned computer vision early on. Are you using computer vision plus LiDAR or one or the other?
Yeah, the robot has a set of different sensors. So it uses LiDAR, it uses computer vision, it has other sensors as well. The thing about autonomy is modality of sensors. You need to actually have different types of sensors so that you can operate under different conditions. So these sensors kind of complement each other. It's a Swiss cheese kind of a strategy for having redundancy. So no single sensor is perfect. But if you put them together, you can have the necessary coverage.
So let's move on to your go-to-market strategy. So how did you go about forming the first delivery partnerships? What was that sales process like when it was still early and it still is for many people? If you could describe that.
Yeah, so we've obviously been super fortunate because we always had Postmates behind us. And now with Uber, they are a key partner to us. But the reason we spun out was to sign new partners and kind of expand our reach. And it's been an extremely exciting year for us because the industry has kind of turned. There's been a pivotal moment because of the labor shortage, because of a lot of, the pandemic. So we are finding ourselves with a lot of inbound interest. We have, we have investments from 7-Eleven, from Delivery Hero, which is a kind of the Uber of Europe and Asia. So there's an incredible amount of inbound interest. There are partnerships that we haven't announced yet. Actually, one of them was just announced, in fact, by accident, which was the Chili's or Brinker International, So there's more to come. We would have a lot of exciting news to share. But here's the interesting thing. We don't have a sales team. It's just me and my COO who do all the business development, because this has all been inbound. We have way more demand for robots than we are going to have supply anytime soon.
Interesting. In terms of scalability, so I know from when I used to work in the shared scooter space that weather can be quite an issue, depending on where you choose to operate. So, but you've got one less problem in that your users aren't physically out there and manipulating the device. So I suppose you also get greater demand when weather is poor, correct? And if you could talk about how does this impact weather in general, impact your where you choose to operate.
Absolutely. So, we started in LA. So the first thing we had to figure out was temperature. And now we are expanding to other markets. So, you have to deal with precipitation, snow. If you take a step back, these are all fairly solvable problems that, with vehicles we've solved for a very, very long time. So it's just a matter of when do you make the investment and when does it actually make sense to try to address, let's say, the 1% of weather conditions, or maybe 0.1 or 0.01% of weather conditions. I think where the industry is and the kind of utilization we are trying to get, we are not going to go after like a, hurricane weather condition that we are trying to cover. We are going after kind of the 99% of the time where you have precipitation and snow, but it's not like, the city is shutting down. The robots are not going to be covering that because we're not trying to build emergency robots just yet. This is going to be about, day to day, having a shortage of labor, having robots actually complement the drivers out there.
So Nuro just announced that they will begin testing autonomous vehicles in LA. And per a previous press release, they're running autonomous deliveries in Silicon Valley with a larger sort of vehicle. And you have local competitors such as Coco, KiwiBot, and college campuses. And out here in the East Coast, you have Starship Technologies. How do you see the competitive landscape evolving, and what advantages may you have over these others?
Yeah, it's a great question. I believe we are very unique as a company because of the fact that we started in one of the kind of delivery platforms. We had access to an incredible amount of data, and we designed our robot from the ground up to have the biggest impact, the best economics, the biggest reach, and basically get to market as quickly as possible. And that's probably the easiest way to sum it up. We are in a position where we are able to do deliveries that actually are, profitable. So we don't have to be subsidizing the cost of delivery. And we can do that today. That's a pretty incredible place to be. And it's a combination of design decisions made early on, plus the fact that we actually have the technology that we've invested in for 5 years now, building that autonomy that I mentioned earlier, building the right robot that can handle the conditions of a city. Now, one thing I want to also clarify, we don't see, say, Nuro as a competitor. We just, delivery is always multimodal. It's always been someone is on a bike or on their feet. There's someone in a vehicle, someone in a truck. You have a range of different vehicles for different deliveries. Any time that a delivery can be done in a sidewalk robot, it should be done in a sidewalk robot because it would be cheaper, it would be better for the environment, it creates less congestion for the city, and it's a better experience for customers, and it costs less to merchants. So for us, short distance deliveries, on-demand deliveries in kind of a dense urban or suburban even environments would be better served with sidewalk robots. And Nuro is a great, company. I have a lot of actually admiration and respect for them. And they are going to do great things when it comes to deliveries that are longer distance or longer time frame, where you can batch a lot of things together, or larger items. So it's going to be this complementary relationship. We actually don't see this as a competitive situation. But in fact, it could be a partnership down the line where we actually address different segments of the market.
What has been the reaction from both customers and non-customers, including cities? I know that San Francisco at some point had some concerns around these robots.
It's actually been a great reception by policymakers and also by the public. So we designed the robots with that in mind, that this is a phase where robots need to be accepted. You know, there's really, there are two things that you would never lose money if you bet on. One of them is change, and the other one is people's resistance to change. So we knew that when we are introducing this, there's going to be all sorts of kind of reactions, and people need to really understand the value. It's been better received than we could have ever expected. So on the policy side, for example, that you asked, there has not been a single market, single city that we have engaged and not received permission to operate, whether it's West Hollywood or LA or cities in the Bay Area. The fact of the matter is that policymakers are very aligned by the value proposition that we provide, which is reducing congestion, reducing emissions, helping local businesses that are really kind of encumbered by the cost of delivery right now. So no matter which side of the political spectrum you are, or you know how you actually look at it, these delivery robots are going to help you with your objectives. So when we engage them, when we tell them about this value, when we actually try to kind of make this a collaborative relationship, we always manage to actually get good partners out of that process and do the deployments as needed.
Besides that first sort of challenge in getting people acquainted with these robots, have you seen any other challenges on the ground in operating?
You know, we have a saying here, which is we find the truth on the sidewalk. So we gotta go out there and discover the long tail of kind of edge cases. We've had robots that run into goats on the sidewalk. Like, you just don't know what to expect when you're on a sidewalk. It's an incredibly fun problem. We are expanding our team right now so quickly, hiring so fast, because people love solving these problems that are, you know, very real application of self-driving today in the real world, where we are delivering value and we are seeing what robots and people kind of look like. How would it be when the two of them are put together in this kind of chaotic environment of a sidewalk? So we are always learning something new. But I would say, if you ask me what is the biggest challenge right now, it's just scaling up. It's just the question of how fast can we build this, how fast can we put into use, because the need is there. There's a significant demand for it, and we just can't meet that demand fast enough.
A bit of a segue here. So I noticed you've been investing in a number of startups since 2018, including Robinhood and a couple of bio companies. What sort of things do you look for in a early stage company to invest in?
Yeah, so I've been fortunate to be in this ecosystem, and you like to support companies. You like to be involved in companies that are doing interesting things. For me, it's pretty simple. I want to put my kind of attention on companies that are working on something I truly believe in, something that I believe is going to have significant kind of impact in the future. So I don't do a lot of investment, but when I do, it's usually about what kind of change, what kind of impact do I believe they're going to create. And Robinhood is a great example, but there are other companies. Ouster was an early investment, actually, that I also did. It's a LiDAR company, because I saw their technology and I really liked what I saw. So occasionally when I have the opportunity to work with founders, I also try to kind of, lend them a hand early.
So back to sort of robotics. What's next? Is it scaling production? Is it expanding to new markets or other business segments?
Absolutely. It's all about scaling. In fact, we are obviously identifying markets we want to go to. We have a long list of partnerships in different stages of integration. And hopefully, many of them we'll be able to share sooner than later. We have, building up the fleet and getting it to more places. So this is that phase of kind of growth for this industry. I expect anyone in any major kind of city in the U.S. in the next few years is going to be seeing robots kind of, operating around you sooner than you think.
Great. Yeah. So that's all I have for you today. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for your time.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.